It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. Broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 35 degrees. Let's face it, it's miserable outside. We're looking for snow, then rain and snow afternoon, and we're already seeing that. It's going to turn to just plain rain after 3 p.m. Gusty winds today as well, east wind to 35 miles per hour. Gust as high as 50 today. Coming up on the midday news, 32 new cases of COVID for the Kodiak Island Borough reported today. How the Tok School District is using a hybrid in-person and online instruction model. And Alaska has a new Rhodes Scholar. We'll find out where he comes from. These stories and more after NPR headline news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris are scheduled to receive their first presidential daily briefing today after waiting weeks for the Trump administration to cooperate. However, as Trump's exit draws near, his campaign still waging battles over an election that Trump claims without evidence has been marred by fraud. His team, led by Rudy Giuliani, is in Arizona doing just that. At the same time, Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, among other senior officials, were announcing the state had certified Biden's narrow victory over Trump and challenging Trump's baseless claims of fraud through mail-in ballots.
Of those 3.42 million ballots cast, over 88% of them were cast early, which provides more proof that Arizona's ballot-by-mail system works.
Today's announcement also paves the way for former astronaut Mark Kelly to take his seat in the U.S. Senate. Kelly's the husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, a shooting survivor and gun control advocate. The Supreme Court is reviewing President Trump's directive to alter the 2020 census numbers used to determine the next Electoral College map. NPR's Hanzi Lo Wang reports the justices heard oral arguments today and may release their decision as soon as next month.
The Trump administration is urging the Supreme Court to issue a ruling that would allow President Trump to exclude unauthorized immigrants from the census numbers used for reallocating congressional seats, despite the Constitution's requirement to include the whole number of persons in each state. Justice Amy Coney Barrett noted that this administration would be the first to leave out residents of the U.S. because of their immigration status.
A lot of the historical evidence and the longstanding practice really cuts against your position.
The administration says it still has not decided exactly how it would come up with the count of unauthorized immigrants needed to subtract them from the census numbers. Hanzi Luong, NPR News, New York.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is raising concerns with Ethiopia's prime minister about ongoing hostilities in the Tigray region. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports a nearly month-long conflict is creating a new refugee crisis in the area.
According to a statement, Pompeo is calling for a complete end to the fighting and a, quote, constructive dialogue to resolve the crisis. He says U.S. and African Union diplomats are ready to help. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has claimed victory in the military operation against the Tigray People's Liberation Front, which used to dominate Ethiopian politics. The TPLF says it is still fighting. In his phone call with the prime minister, Pompeo expressed grave concerns about the ongoing hostilities and the risk that poses to the region. Tens of thousands of Ethiopians have fled to Sudan in recent weeks. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
The Dow closes down 271 points. This is NPR. The longest-serving Republican in the Senate was back on the job today, 2 weeks after testing positive for coronavirus. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley said in a statement that he isolated, but he did not develop symptoms and was cleared by his doctors to return to the office. The 87-year-old lawmaker acknowledged the virus affects people differently as he reminded people that more than 1,000 Americans die every day from COVID-19. Today, he urged the Senate to pass new coronavirus relief that he says is long overdue. The coronavirus has now been detected on a mink farm in Oregon, adding to the list of multiple European mink farms that found infections in their animals. Terry Schultz reports a Danish government is struggling to deal with the aftermath of its decision to require the extermination of millions of mink.
Danish lawmakers will be receiving a report on disposal options after hundreds of bodies of dead minks started resurfacing last week, pushed up out of the ground by gases caused by decomposition. Agriculture Minister Rasmus Prehn has asked the country's Environmental Protection Agency to examine whether the carcasses can be dug up and burned. The animals were exterminated on the orders of Prehn's predecessor, Mogens Jensen, when it was found they carried a mutation of the coronavirus. Jensen had to resign when it was found there was no legal basis for that decision. The Danish government says there's no health risk from the burial site, but nearby residents are concerned with their drinking water supply and a swimming lake just over a tenth of a mile away. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz.
And I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the law firm Cooley LLP. With offices in the U.S., Europe, and Asia, Cooley advises entrepreneurs, investors, financial institutions, and established companies around the world, where innovation meets the law.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
According to the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization, 32 new cases of COVID-19 have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. 5 cases were tested on 11/25 and are under investigation for contraction of the virus. 15 cases were tested on the 28th of November, and 12 cases were test results that were sent off-island to be processed and were seed back today. The nature of these cases is still being determined due to the holiday weekend. This brings the total case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 303 since the start of the pandemic, with 84 cases being classified as active, 44 people completed their isolation period, and have been removed from the active case count. There have been 7 hospitalizations to date on Kodiak due to COVID-19. 4 patients are currently hospitalized. The hospital has stood up additional beds and canceled most outpatient procedures as part of their surge plans. A release from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization stated that the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services is urging those who receive a positive test result to, quote, notify their own contacts as soon as possible so individuals can quarantine without delay, unquote. School districts throughout Alaska are struggling to educate students while keeping them safe from exposure to coronavirus. Most districts have had to lock down schools and convert to online instruction to keep kids safe, despite parents' concerns that their children aren't learning as well as they would in the classroom. That's why Tok-based Alaska Gateway School District has been using a hybrid form of teaching that includes both in-person and online instruction. And the superintendent says the system so far is working pretty well. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
When schools began shutting down earlier this year and converting to online instruction to limit the spread of coronavirus, it became clear that many students weren't learning as well as they did in the classroom. That's why the Alaska Gateway School District launched what the superintendent calls a blended form of instruction that teaches both virtually and in class.
We wanted to develop a system that would enable us to move as seamlessly as possible back and forth between a virtual and an in-person environment.
Scott McManus says the system was needed because the district, like all others in Alaska, has had to shut down schools when the number of community residents testing positive for the virus rose too high. And then, when possible, the districts reopen schools after the spike in positive tests subsides and the buildings have been deep cleaned.
Our whole system is designed around this blended learning idea. So everything that the teachers are doing in their classrooms, they have a way of trying to do that virtually at home.
McManus says that's come in handy this school year when the district had to shut down and then reopen the Mentasta Lake Katie John School because of a couple of waves of virus positive tests among residents of the area on the Tok cutoff.
We did a two-week complete shutdown that was virtual, and now we're doing what's called a soft start, and we're rolling those kids back into class based on family pods.
Family pods are groups of students who live in one household and who have not tested positive for exposure to the virus. So those students are considered safe to return to the classroom. The pod is then rotated into classes, usually for 2 days a week, but still required to continue online instruction throughout. That's also being done at the Tetlin School in coordination with the village council that oversees communities where the schools are located.
We're basically following their lead because it's their community.
The blended instruction helped Northway School students keep up when village and district officials opened and shut that schoolhouse a couple of times this semester because of virus concerns. According to the district's website, the school's now shut for 24 days.
Right now we're in a full shutdown, so we're doing virtual in Northway.
To handle an outbreak around Tok, attendance has been split at the K-12 Tok School, the district's biggest. Students in kindergarten through 5th grade attend classes in school, while 6th through 12th graders are learning online. Students at the district's other schools in Eagle, Tanacross, and Dot Lake are all being taught in classrooms. McManus says online instruction isn't as good as in-class, but he says as part of a blended teaching system, it can help fill the gap when students can't come to class, if teachers maintain daily contact with them, and if the district ensures the students have what they need to log on from home.
We have internet subsidies that we've worked out with our local internet service provider, and we have a program called AP&T Connect, so all of our kids have access to internet at home.
Or at least almost all. McManus says the program has boosted the number of students with home internet access from about 50% last year to about 96% this year. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A university student from the Northwest Arctic village of Nuurvik was just awarded the Rhodes Scholarship, one of the world's oldest and most prestigious academic awards. The award funds 2 to 3 years of academic study at Oxford University in the UK. The Harvard senior, originally from the Alaska village with a population of a little over 600 people, was selected from thousands of students across the world. KOTZ's Wesley Early has more.
In Nuurvik, everyone spends a lot of time at the Nuurvikalik School. Wilfred Kugaruk Sibel, whose parents were teachers, spent even more time there.
My dad would teach me these big words, and I was 2 years old, wandering around the gym asking people for assistance rather than for help, and people just got a kick out of that. And that's the kind of thing that I think set me on the course I am on today.
Though not a Nupiak, both Zabel and before him his father grew up in the village. His ties to the community run deep. He says he was encouraged by everyone in Nuurvik to develop a love of learning.
Whenever they saw me walking around with a book, they would like hype me up a little bit and cheer me on. And that being kind of a creature of attention the way I am, I think that positive reinforcement really kind of had a Pavlovian effect, and now I'm just addicted to reading books.
Zabel excelled as a student throughout high school, serving as a student member of the State Board of Education, as well as being part of the U.S. Senate Youth Program. He brought his love of reading to Harvard, where he studies comparative literature, primarily between Yiddish and Inupiaq works.
I look at specifically displacement and people losing land and the way that that is reflected in poetry.
Zabel wanted to continue his studies of cultural displacement and the efforts to revitalize culture, which led him to apply for the Rhodes Scholarship. He says it was an arduous 7-month process, tasked with essays, letters of recommendation, securing a sponsorship from Harvard, and other scholastic work. It didn't help that Zabel was fighting COVID-19 when he started applying. By the end of the process, when he was selected as a finalist, Zabel figured he was a long shot and was prepared for the worst.
And so when they actually said my name and said that I won, I was completely unprepared. I had no idea how to react. I just stared at the Zoom camera in complete shock.
Zabel plans to study economic and social history while attending Oxford. He wants to tie all of his studies into helping support the culture of Native communities, as well as cultures of any communities in the world displaced by colonialism.
Connect, Inupiaq revitalization work with Kalaallit revitalization work in Greenland or Irish revitalization work in Ireland, or, you know, because all of these fights are kind of the same work being done, the same fundamental struggle, for lack of a better word.
Zabel says unlike some of his peers, many of whom come from well-to-do families, he owes everything to growing up in a tight-knit village.
I've made it this far largely because of where I'm from and the people that raised me. And no shortage of blessings, of course. And so if it's my responsibility to make sure that by my success, I can help other people. And, you know, that's, if I can't do that, there's no point in me having gotten the success in the first place.
Zabel says the only uncertainty in his next steps will be if the pandemic forces him to learn remotely or if he can pack his bags for Europe. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
149 Alaskans are currently hospitalized with COVID-19. The state reached that marker after 28 Alaskans were reported hospitalized on Saturday. An additional 10 patients are hospitalized and suspected of having the disease. 1 month ago, the number of Alaskans hospitalized with COVID-19 was less than half of Sunday's count. 2 Alaskans died over the weekend of the coronavirus, bringing that total number so far to 120. The state also reported that nearly 1,300 new cases of the disease between Saturday and Sunday. With those counts, the state crossed the 30,000 case mark, which is just over 4% of the state's population. Officials have been warning for weeks that the number of cases reported is an underestimate of the true number because the state health department doesn't have enough staff to enter all the data. Additionally, the health department says that about 1,600 positive cases weren't reported to the state by a commercial lab. Over half of those positive tests were in the Mat-Su area, which could see its reported numbers rise dramatically over the next several days as workers enter those tests into the system. The health department is urging Alaskans to avoid gatherings and crowds, to wear masks, and keep social distance from anyone not in their household. Anchorage's city manager, Bill Falsey, is stepping down from his position on Tuesday. Falsey, who announced that he is running for Anchorage mayor, has been in the position since November 2017. He previously served as the municipal attorney beginning in 2015. Falsey has been running the city's emergency response to the COVID-19 pandemic. He was a familiar face at press conferences early in the pandemic, giving regular updates on the city's preparations and challenges. Falsey is also credited with overseeing $1 billion sale of MLNP to Chugach Electric Association, and recently he helped with the mayoral transition after former Mayor Ethan Berkowitz resigned. Falsey will be jumping right into campaigning with his first fundraiser scheduled for Tuesday, the first day his resignation is effective. He'll be succeeded by Anna Henderson, who has been serving as the deputy city manager. In a surprise announcement, the Trump administration has denied a permit for the Pebble Mine in southwest Alaska. The proposed open-pit gold and copper mine would have been one of the largest in North America. At many points during the Trump presidency, it had appeared that the permit was certain to be granted, but the Army Corps of Engineers determined the mine plan would not comply with the Clean Water Act and that the project is not in the public interest.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Fly farms win big in Britain. More on Magmeal after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at AMC.org.
Fish Radio has reported on the global search for alternatives to wild fish as a food source for farmed fish and how insects fit the bill. That South Africa fly farming company we've touted, called AgriProtein, has won a Food Chain Global Champion Award in Britain for its Magmeal, an ingredient used in fish and animal feeds made from flies reared on food wastes. Every year, a quarter of the world's fish catches, 20 million tons, is directed away from dinner plates and instead goes into fish meal, according to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. World fish growers are facing increased criticism to find other food sources. Fish meal accounts for 60 to 70% of farmed fish production costs, and it can take up to 4 pounds of wild fish meal to grow 1 pound of farmed salmon. Tests prove that all kinds of insects can make a good feed, and the high crude fat content in black soldier flies provides an extra nutritional boost. The company calls the U.S. the world center of protein consumers and organic wastes, a natural fit for its fly-building businesses. The company has plans to build 200 fly farms in the U.S. and Canada by 2027, under current news reports, supplying the $100 billion aquafeed market. Scientists from Idaho universities also are embracing the waste-to-nutrient industry with a maggot-based fish feed that also reduces billions of pounds of cow poop. Idaho is the nation's largest rainbow trout producer and the fourth biggest dairy state. Flies feed on the cow manure and seed it with maggots. It's enriched with fish guts and turned into a feed that's being snapped up by the trout. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 30th and last day of November, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 9:28 a.m., and it will set again at 4:30 this afternoon, giving us 7 hours and 2 minutes of precious daylight. That is a loss of 2 minutes and 53 seconds, less than 3 minutes, compared to yesterday. Looking at our local district tides, we have a high tide coming up at 1:21 this afternoon. That will be a 9.7-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:08 this evening, a slight minus tide, minus 0.55 feet. Our high tide this in the wee hours of the morning will be at 2:39 a.m. of 7.4 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning here on the east side of 7:49 a.m. of 3 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 1:53 this afternoon. That will be a 15.8 foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:35 this evening of minus 1.2 feet. Your high tide in the middle of the night will be at 2:55 a.m., 14.6 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 8:39 a.m. of 3.3 feet. Currently 35 degrees. It is miserable and hideous outside. And we're looking for more of that, turning more to rain and away from the snowy component of what's coming down now. The rain and snow could be heavy at times this afternoon. East winds to 30 miles per hour will increase to 35 miles per hour this afternoon and could gust as high as 50 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 100%. Total daytime snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches of wet, mucky stuff is possible. For tonight, rain, mainly before 7 p.m., then showers after that. Cloudy skies this evening, then becoming partly cloudy with a low around 41. East wind 25 miles per hour will turn to the south this evening and could gust as high as 35 miles per hour tonight. For tomorrow, look for showers before 1 p.m., then rain between 1 and 4 p.m., showers after 4 p.m., high near 43 tomorrow with southeast wind to 20 miles per hour with higher gusts up to 30 miles per hour, 100% chance of precipitation tomorrow as well. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will enter the western Gulf on Monday morning. It is associated with a 964 millibar low. It will move across the Gulf into the eastern Gulf by Tuesday morning and a front associated with a 980 millibar low will move near Kodiak Island on Wednesday morning. As a result, we have a storm warning today for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Southeast wind to 50 knots right now, seas to 18 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast winds to 25 knots, seas to 17 feet. Over in the Shelikof, we have a gale warning today. East wind to 30 knots will increase to 40 knots this afternoon in the Shelikof, seas to 11 feet. For tomorrow, southeast winds to 15 knots and seas to 3 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, gale warning today. Southeast winds will increase and turn to the east to 45 knots this afternoon. Seas will build to 16 feet in Chiniac Bay this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for southeast winds to 20 knots and seas to 7 feet. In Marmot Bay, southeast winds to 30 knots, becoming east 45 knots this afternoon. Seas will build to 18 feet in Marmot Bay this afternoon. For tomorrow, southeast wind to 20 knots and seas to 7 feet. The city of Kodiak has extended its date for accepting water and sewer utility customers' emergency health relief applications. The Water and Sewer Utility Relief Program will go on until December 15th until 5 p.m. All customers of the Water and Sewer City may apply for financial relief in the form of a one-time utility billing credit not to exceed $500. All city water and sewer utility customers are encouraged to apply, and do so, please, as soon as possible. Applications are available on the city website. If you have more questions, call the city cashier's office at 486-8650. But literally, if you are a customer and you had any at all financial adverse effects from COVID-19, you are eligible. Send a box of Kodiak Love with the Beartown Market Winter Solstice Box. This winter box is full of carefully handcrafted arts and goods from off-road photography, fine arts by Hannah Scholl, Midnight Riders, Ocean Born Design, Natasha Zahn Priestess, and Emerald Isle Essentials. Boxes are selling fast. Please head over to kodiakarts.org to purchase yours. And remember, local pickup is December 5th between 12 and 2 at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Attention local artists and businesses, Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary is seeking donations for their upcoming auction. Funds raised from the auction will be used for the Auxiliary Scholarship Fund, helping students in the healthcare field achieve their educational goals. Donations will be accepted through December 5th. If you have something you can donate to the auction, please contact either Becca at 942-1680 or Yvonne at 654-9899. Or you can email them at kodiakhospitalauxiliary, all one word, at gmail.com. The library is sponsoring a Home for the Holidays handicraft session on every Monday at 2 p.m. via Zoom. So it is happening 2 p.m. today, and you can join them online each week to learn a new craft. But they supply the paper and instructions. So for next week, you supply the food coloring, but they supply all the other stuff. Supplies may be picked up this week on Wednesday and Saturday, and on Monday. Instructions will be posted to their webpage as well. So for more information about this, to reserve your supplies, call them at 486-8686, and you should always be visiting the library's Facebook page. Alaska Aerospace Corporation will be launching rockets, hopefully, at Narrow Cape sometime between December 7th and 18th. Launch windows will be between, 10 and 1 o'clock p.m. local time. The following restrictions, coordinated with the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, will be enforced to ensure public safety. On launch day, there are road restrictions, including roadblocks at the Passagshack Road, and the Passagshack Road roadblock will be manned prior to the opening of the launch window. It will initially function as a checkpoint for all authorized traffic to proceed past the roadblock. The Passagshack roadblock will be the farthest point on the road to the PSCA that the public can travel once the area is secured. The Passagshack roadblock is positioned so that vehicle traffic can easily and safely turn around. And again, that launch window is expected between December 7th and 18th.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.